Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We are talking Historic Fredericksburg Foundation this morning. It's been too long since we have had Danae Peckler in this talk about HFFI, but here she is in all her glory.
Good morning, Ted.
Good morning,
everyone in Fredericksburg. How are you all?
we have a lot to talk about because there's never a dull moment.
Definitely not. Definitely not in this town. There's lots of good action here. So yeah, and in our historic community, I'm sure everybody is familiar with some of the things going on for the 250th by this point. But it's
a lot of good stuff.
Oh my gosh, it is really it's shot. You know, we should not be surprised. There are enough historians in this town and people who really enjoy and get into. Our cultural heritage here that it really shouldn't be a surprise, but it's been really great to see the history community kind of come alive with all of these wonderful events that are really pulling at what makes Fredericksburg incredibly unique and what makes our local history national history, like I like to say. So it's kind of cool.
The other day I saw on the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation Facebook page a picture, because every Thursday you put up an old older
TBT,
pictures.
If we were to be like the youngsters, there is a throwback Thursday.
And so you had the Rising Sun Tavern, and it was a black and white, sorry looking building. And I looked at that and thought, this, boys and girls, is why you need a Historic Fredericksburg Foundation.
Yeah.
It's a wonder, looking at that picture, that the Rising Sun Tavern is even still there today for us to learn from.
Well, and we call it in the scholarly world, it's called a survival bias. But to a certain extent, you're right. We are very lucky to have 18th century resources still here in town, and the ones that we did get saved, they really had a lot of significance associated with them. Sometimes the story wasn't exactly 100% true, but don't let the facts get in the way, right? I mean, I think that's something to be said. But these are really we are blessed to have such wonderful history here, and certainly. I'm blessed to have generations of people who have invested in maintaining it, sustaining it, and keeping it alive for all of us, right? So I find that, historic buildings, when my mother said, gosh, what is historic preservation? What are you getting your degree in? Because I had my undergraduate in history, and I said, Mom, I'm going from reading about people and events to the places and spaces, making the places and spaces where it happened stick around. And it really is.
Yeah.
Our buildings and our landscape here, is like a primary source document. It really can detail a lot more, and it continues to teach us. I mean, I will say, I also tell people that history is a luxury to a certain extent for the people who have the time to gather it. No one gets in the industry to get rich, that's for sure. And so we're always learning new things because, like with this 250 event, when there's grants and there's reasons for historians to really be able to dive into it, those types of moments give us opportunities to kind of explore and maybe reinterpret, open things up a bit more. So that's what's really exciting. At least right now for this year, I know it'll continue to be exciting, but there's a heck of a lot of stuff going on this month and next month.
And we're going to jump into a lot of it. But you talked about that. It reminds me that last year when we all saw the scaffolding around and the work done on the Renwick building downtown, you and I did a video there. It was just fascinating because it was more than just, oh, have you seen, that building sure looks different with the scaffolding around it. There was so much history that a lot of us didn't realize.
Right. And layers of history. That's another part as an analogy there. The history is like an onion. You can peel back the layers. And when you have those primary source documents, you can come at them from different, or primary sources in general, artifacts, is another way to put it. You can come at it from different angles. So yeah, we talked about the Renwick and the history of that building, but also the Wallace Library, the garden space in between, that being one of the more significant intersections in town because of the National Bank, because of the Episcopal Church, because of the Presbyterian Church, which is actually supposedly built by some of Thomas Jefferson's builders. So yeah, you kind of get to understand. And then, of course, the current context that we have on it, too, and how much these places mean things to us in the modern era as well as in the past. Right?
That's what Historic Fredericksburg Foundation is so good at doing, is telling these stories and making it more than just the bricks and the roofs and the actual structure.
Yes, most definitely. I think I went to Newport, Rhode Island. If anybody's ever been there, they have those mansions, right? And of course, when you're touring one of those mansions, I don't think you think of yourself as a Vanderbilt, I was going through it and we saw the servants' quarters, I was like, oh, this is where I would be. I'd be in the hospitality industry over here cooking or something like this, you know? Right. So, you know, you can come at it from the people's shared experience. You can come at it from the architectural design and the cultural preferences of the day. I also like to talk about the size of our houses now, right? And how much square footage we need versus like how much our grandparents needed. Where like they were raising like, you know, kids like in a kid family in a Cape Cod.
But right. Now, but and now.
Now. Now you need your two-car garage and all the other stuff to it. But that's what it is. It's culture. I think there was a really good line from one of the books in grad school, Del Upton, who said buildings are like poems. They realize culture. And so there's just different ways to look at it. But you're right. The tangible built environment really is something that is important. It really has layers. And it helps us understand the complexity of things. It puts it in perspective. So
you just had your annual meeting where you gave out a lot of awards. And it really shows there's a lot of people interested in this subject and doing things.
Yes, and I will say I had to take a few minutes there at the annual meeting even before the awards because there are a lot of great projects that are going on and a lot of wonderful work that was done in the last year. And I really have, preservation has always been kind of rooted in private investment, but it is really taking an uptick here in a good way again. I know it kind of ebbs and flows with the economy about what we can invest in. And of course, we always say that poverty preserves because if you can't afford to replace it, but nonetheless, there's some really great projects, some beautiful things going on downtown, some historic tax credit projects. We don't do too many of those, but the historic tax credit, there's a state and a federal level incentive that helps encourage. It's one of the few carrots that the federal government will give to anybody for fixing anything that is privately owned. But that's all on the notion that our historic built environment that is so culturally enriching that it's a public good. It's considered like police force. It's underneath the same kind of things when it comes down to it, that it's a public good. It's something that gives back to all of us. So it was really nice to see some of that stuff going on. And then there's the awards, of course. We had one great Spark Award. That's the idea that it's an economic kind of ripple effect when you rehabilitate a building in a certain area and kind of has ripples that come out. A spark, that's right. Like a little that starts the flame, right? And so that one was for 1315 Charles Street, which if anybody knows is right next to where Johnny Johnson's studio was at 1311 and 1313. Mm-hmm. So I actually did a marker report. I was doing the research for Johnny Johnson's studio. And so I had done a lot of research into it was Charles Hunter's Farmer's Friend Plowworks that was actually almost most of that block and even over on the other side of Princess Anne right there by Hawk Street. But anyway, but in the 1300 block, it's actually a pocket African-American neighborhood from the late 1800s. And so 1315, I think, was actually built around 1900. I can't remember the exact date, but it belonged to a Joseph Robinson, who was the son of Lindsay Robinson. And Lindsay was an African-American carpenter. So it's very likely that that is actually, some of our Black heritage there that and tradespeople and that Charles Hunter actually sold those lots to them and kind of carved off that space over there at the side for that neighborhood, which then morphed into Johnny Johnson used to live in the house across the way that was owned by either Mr. Walker or Mr. Grant, and then DMK had a funeral home in what was Johnny Johnson's studio, right? So it's got a lot of
all
history
in that area.
Heritage.
Who knows?
All
you would never
there,
know
and
that.
I'm so glad that 1315 really came alive because it was covered in asbestos and it had but they restored the weatherboard siding. They restored the windows. This was actually Betty Westerland and Naomi Houn, I believe. With Town and Country Elite Realty. And it sold very quickly. I don't know how long it was on the market, but that was pretty fast. That was a good flip over. So it does show also that history sells. And I think that there is, it really does. It's unique. It's different. And when people come downtown, I think it's something that they certainly are looking for. So that was a really fun one. And then we recognized a few wonderful humans, Blanton Massey, Hamilton Palmer, both of who have been contributing to preservation efforts locally and certainly telling different stories. Hamilton's done a lot of work down in Lower Prince Edward, right? And Lower Charles, certainly the Purina Tower. A lot of people know that he was instrumental in rehabbing there. And Blanton's done a lot of work with the Jean de Baptiste and helping tell, some of our Black history and heritage as well. So there were some really great things to highlight there. We also did the Mutual Assurance Society. If nobody has seen some of those videos, the Mutual Assurance Society of Virginia is one one of the oldest insurance companies around, I believe in general, but I certainly in the state. And they have these wonderful, cool little sketches of the built environment whenever you would take out an insurance policy, starting as early as like 1794, but I think in Fredericksburg, 1796, they would kind of sketch the layout. So we have an idea of what our colonial era landscape looked like because of these policies, which is really wonderful.
Oh, interesting.
And that insurance company, their records are at the Library of Virginia, and there's been this major effort by Mutual Assurance to do documentary kind of little series. You may have seen it. People may have seen it on YouTube. Michael Spencer actually was involved in exploring the Mary Washington House, and that had like has like over 40,000 hits now. So
I've got to go
really
look at
wonderful.
It.
Yeah, you definitely should.
I will.
And it kind of, Michael kind of walks you through, again, the combination, the idea that our buildings are primary sources and that this information helps us read and how they changed. And then we can also imagine how that changed and affected Mary's life and the people who worked there. So yeah. It tells a richer story, a more fuller, richer story. That's what I'll say. But anyway, so Mutual Assurance Society and the local university actually was involved in digital scanning of a lot of their stuff. So now those sketches, all of the scans are going to be available online here soon. So that's some exciting stuff for researchers. If you nerd out like me, anyway.
We've got a lot of exciting stuff to talk about. There's a lot of programs going on in April, so we're going to jump into that when we come back. Quick
Indeed.
Break. Danae Peckler here this morning from Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, hffi.org, if you want to get involved and find out more. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Danae Peckler in this morning from Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, hffi.org. And before we get out of here, we'll talk about just the importance of getting involved locally and in joining Historic Fredericksburg Foundation. So we were talking about awards. I know there was a few others we didn't get to.
Yes. I would love to definitely give a shout out. We had three E. Boyd Graves Preservation Excellence Awards this time around. So that award is supposed to it's named after E. Boyd Graves, who was with HFI for a long time and really invested heavily in high quality preservation. And so we actually recognized a historic tax credit project at 507 Caroline. So it's really nice. So you have the John Paul Jones House, as people call it, right at the corner of Caroline.
Yeah, downtown.
And right in Lafayette. And then you step over, and then there are two townhomes that look exactly the same. One's got a little bit of a different roof line, 505, and then 507 next to it. And 507 had been allowed to significantly deteriorate. I know it was quite an investment by Jules Gerald Stover, who actually had owned the property next door and ended up buying the neighbor's house because it was affecting hers, which I know is a story that a lot of us might empathize with.
Yeah.
But anyway, but they had to do a significant investment. There was a lot of termite damage and other things, and it is also an easement property for HFFI. So that was one of the ones that way back when actually John Ballantyne helped rehabilitate. So it's nice to see that get new life. Another one was people may recognize down on Charles Street. There's another duplex, speaking of kind of like a townhome duplex, that Jamie Scully significantly rehabilitated and brought back into service. So that's at the corner of Charles, and I want to say is it Princess Elizabeth? That little white duplex. It's 1835, and again, in a traditional working class neighborhood, mixed race, working class neighborhood. And of course, I know people are following along, at least as much as I am, with the videos from Gulrichs. We actually gave Gulrichs an award for the sign.
The sign,
right?
You say they've preserved
Yes, because that has been carefully restored very well. And I will say it was really fun because in 1987, HFI also awarded them the same award for the sign. So it's another
reminder. They kept
it
up.
That's right. And it's another reminder, again, that, like, you don't just save something once. Preservation is maintenance. And it takes that level of care to really maintain some of our older and iconic pieces. You know, I just think about how much that sign has, has shaped and really been a part of downtown. So.
And some of these things, whether it's the sign or just even some of these residences, do people mm-hmm. come to HFFI and say, here's what I'm thinking. Am I going to be allowed to do it? Should I do it? What do you think?
Right. Yes. So we do have people who think ahead to do that. And we certainly have on our website, we have a whole bunch of information about maintaining your building. I think, sometimes people may be a little scared to come down and talk to us. I promise I'm not scary. I'm really, right, Ted? I'm
yes,
so friendly.
Yes, you are. No,
pleasant. I try to encourage people by also saying, home maintenance is hard. It's not easy. We live in a planned obsolescence world, and Lowe's tells you to mm-hmm. never stop improving. improving. You limit yourself by the amount of research you're willing to do, but I can guarantee you that there's a whole industry out there that wants to sell you a lot of crap, and a lot of crap that might break within 15 to 20 years. But if you actually look back and you see how we've stewarded, you know, wood can last. There's like a 10,000-year-old wood temple. You know, the wood can last 10,000 for ages.
Years?
Yes, over in Cambodia. And then there's slate roofs can last up to 400, 500 years. Some of these materials, our ancestors built things to last. And at least one of our coloring sheets that I'll hand out at Earth Day, and I gave out the Climate Action Summit, says what we do with that cultural inheritance is our legacy. So, you know, it's a challenge, but it's also something that it really isn't that difficult. I also tell people I'll have a wood window, an old wood window stash, and I'll show people how to actually reglaze your own windows at Earth Day. I've done that for a couple of years now, but I think sometimes it blows people's minds that that you could do this yourself if you wanted to just take a little time to learn how to be handy. And as I tell Michael Spencer, I love you, dear, that when I'm more willing to accept your learning on the job errors than I am to pay for the ones that
errors there.
I mean, nobody's perfect, but like at least that's a lot cheaper, and it is actually in other news. Once you replace, you always replace windows. Now, right? You have a warranty, and only 5 years for this part, or 10 years for this part, or 20 years for that part, and it's really a sham. The wood windows and storm windows have been shown to be just as energy efficient as the brand new things they're trying to sell you. So really, it's worth taking the time to explore your options, and I'm not going to profit from you from it. So you can come and get free information, and what do you got to lose? So yeah, come on down and ask us away.
Well, today as you talk about that, it just reminds me of last fall talking with some fire and rescue people talking mm-hmm. about how a house today will burn.
Oh,
you
yes.
have such. If you've had an older house, you have more time to get out.
That's exactly right. Isn't that wild?
A newer
house
today.
You may die from vinyl dioxin and poison before you'll actually die from.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's really tragic. But you're right. The time has decreased. Also, if you didn't know, folks, historic plastering and historic plaster walls actually contains fire a lot better. So there's that. I will say too, I learned from our climate summit action. We did kind of a little booklet about how long does it last. So drywall when it's in the landfill when it breaks down yeah. actually releases toxic chemicals, of course, into the waterways. And whenever drywall gets wet, right, you got to replace it. Like plaster
right.
can get
yeah.
wet and dry out. Wood can get wet and dry out and still stay. But black mold really is inherent to gypsum drywall. It is because of bacteria that comes alive in it once you add water. So anyway, it's just a thought. We've really turned most of our life into being disposable, but our building materials really shouldn't be. As humanity, as a society, as culture, we spent millennia learning how to build and work with Mother Nature. It's not a bad thing. We really ought to refocus on that for sustainability and long-term survival.
Well, the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation practices what it preaches. I mean, the building that you're housed in across from the downtown library is one of the older buildings.
Second oldest building in town.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, most definitely. And I think whenever people come into that building, I do say, isn't it amazing? At least the first half, 1.5 stories is 1749, and then the second story is 1809. But yes, we hardly ever even turn on the lights in the building. The windows
yeah.
provide so much natural light,
isn't
the way that it was designed.
Now that
right?
you say that, every
yes.
time I've been in there, I don't think I've ever been in there and
right.
seen
and
lights.
It's, and it's mass masonry construction. That's what we call it when it's, you know, it's not a veneer. It's not a brick veneer over something else. It's mass masonry. And so that actually has incredible powers to hold temperatures. So it stays cooler in the summer because it doesn't heat up as fast, right? And in the winter, like it will retain the solar heat there on the inside too. So it's amazing what those materials have been designed to do. And you realize that, you know, not everybody who, I know there's a tendency to think, oh, we're so much smarter than the people that came before us because, you know,
right.
we live in this era and aren't we just living in a better life? I don't know. That's up for a debate, I think, sometimes. But really, our founding fathers and all the people, the amount of time that they had, the number of books and the things from all over the world that they read, how much and well-traveled and learned. And anyway, but even if you weren't, you didn't have TV and other things to zap your attention,
spend all our times on our phones.
I know. What was it? The monks. Oh, when the monks came through, I loved it. Like one of the main monk guys had said, he's like, your phone is your lover. you know, put your lover down.
Right.
Anyway, sad but true. But yeah, so no, HFI has technical resources, and we certainly have other property files about the history of individual spaces. And I think, you know, our marker research program is always really popular. And we have, gosh, maybe more than 400 reports now. There's a backlog. So if anybody wants to come down and try your hand at researching, whether it's your own property or maybe learning a little bit more about spaces and places in town that matter to you, I encourage you just to pop in HFI for sure. Our archives, we're open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 4, but I'm often there at other times as well, and so you can certainly call ahead or send an email and make an appointment and come check us out.
You're a friendly bunch.
I like to think so. Thank you. I mean, you know, I feel like it's, like I said, it's a choose-your-own-adventure story in every building and every city and every place. Whatever you're into, we'll find something.
That is the interesting thing. It's hard. You can't take more than a few steps where you're telling me a story about something or who, you know.
Truth, yes, that's
who,
right.
You know,
that's
who was on a deed
isn't
here?
That neat? Yeah, right. Or did you know that's called a dental? Or what about this? Yeah. Isn't that a beautiful piece of brickwork? Gosh, yeah. Look at this fingerprint. You're exactly right.
So, have we covered all the awards?
Almost. Actually, I will say I should give a shout out. We did award an excellence in craftsmanship to Chris Whitman, actually with Hablis. He's the man behind the restoration of the stone coins at the Lewis store. So the coins are on the corners there. The sandstone coins Georgian revival, or Georgian feature. We call it Georgian because it was during King George's reign. But anyway, and those kind of iconic coins. So he helped us stabilize and conserve those. And then I will say Michael Spencer was also awarded the Dr. Edward Alvey Jr. Education Award, Professor Michael Spencer. And I did not make the nomination. I admitted that it was a little
Thinking it's about time.
Thank you. That's what Debbie, our newly elected president, Debbie Peterson, had said. She was like, gosh, this should be Michael's award. Oh, God. Okay,
right.
Yeah. The number of reports that he's written and shared publicly, and I mean exhaustive reports, right? He just did this really long one on Brompton. He's done another one on, he did the campus preservation plan for the university, which is, you know, a measly 457 pages long. And then there are other resources that he widely shares as well whenever you follow the Facebook page there for the Department of Historic Preservation at Mary Washington. Anyway, tons of information about Mary Washington's house. And speaking of new things to learn, he and the students during one documentation effort uncovered essentially what is an eaves side chimney. So you have a gable end on a building if you have a gable roof, right? And then an eaves side chimney, which is actually evidently something we had more of in the colonial era, but it was almost gone. There's just a few little pieces that kind of pointed to it, and they when you focus long enough, you know, you can tie it together. But it just goes to show too that you can be in a building for so many times, and there's always something more to learn. So yeah, it's been really fun. So Michael got the Dr. Edward Alvey Award. That follows. This is an award that we've given to John Hennessy, Dr. Gary Stanton, Noel Harrison, some of the most wonderful historians in town. And so, and of course, he continues to teach students and do more workshops for Mary Washington, for Washington Heritage Museums, for HFI. We actually have a state workshop coming up with the state parks that's going to be coming to the Lewis store next month. Lots of really wonderful resources in this town and people who care. Isn't that making a great place to be?
Yeah. HFFI.org for more information. Danae Peckler is here this morning from Historic Fredericksburg Foundation. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
It is a Historic Fredericksburg Foundation this morning, HFFI.org. Danae Peckler is here with a lot of activities going on. I wonder if you wanted to. If you don't want to, we don't have to, but for a few minutes, I mean, the HFFI in the city and works with city government, and I know you watch the budget closely.
Yeah, I've been trying to dive into that giant. And I mean, if you're the type of person like me, like I'm archaic, you know, I like to highlight and write in the margins and flag pages and things like this. Oh God, that's so many hundreds of pages. It's crazy.
Right.
So I can understand how average normal people. It's funny too. Whenever I talk about it, people are like, "Oh, you're reading the budget." Like.
I could so totally so see you doing that.
Yeah.
And you would be smiling.
I would. Well, I mean, you have to laugh at yourself or laugh at it, or sometimes you just cry your eyes out. But it's a complex system, and running a city, you know, I don't envy anyone who's ultimately responsible. I mean, but I certainly I have been monitoring now for like 2 to 3 years since I took on the job. I've got like kind of an Excel sheet that I was kind of tracking the newer projects that got in and the things that have gotten dropped and what's been spent and not been spent, particularly as it comes to historic resources,
sure.
Of course, because that's kind of my jam. I don't know. This is a strange year. I mean, I know people are we're all very aware of how much infrastructure issues are going on, I think.
Yes, we are.
Between the water main breaks that have been happening and some of these other sewer things and our water treatment and now our schools. So anyway, there's a lot of important things that are out there. But I will say, from a preservation perspective, you know, HFI, since I came on, at least I was on the board before I was hired by the organization. But when I came on in the fall of 2023, we started focusing, at least by that next annual meeting and that next budget, on having we identified three top preservation goals that have been around, I mean, at least since 2021, but even stem back to 2015 and sometimes earlier than that, 2009. And we picked these three goals that we thought were the most achievable, that would have the most widespread impact. Number one, to do an economic impact study of historic preservation. Fredericksburg was actually the nation's first city to do this. Back in 1991, it was a very innovative thing. Actually, Charlie McDaniel was president of HFI at the time. And we partnered with the National Trust and also with the federal government to do, essentially, we assessed the amount of money spent in construction and rehabilitation within the historic district, and we compared it to outside the historic district, and they looked at the ripple effect, the number of jobs, the number of things. Anyway, that same formula for assessing the economic impact is still used today. It was very good then. It's very good now, right? And so now, for more than a decade, we've been talking about doing another follow-up study, and this time not just the historic district, but looking at 22401, because frankly, that's how we grab most of the data anyway, right? You're looking at census data, you're looking at these other kind of stuff. So if we were to do it, as we say, citywide, and I've heard some people in leadership positions go, well, why has it got to be across the city? And I'm like, because historic preservation just doesn't stop at the district, right? We got cool stuff outside of the historic district too.
And it would be interesting to know, especially after this amount of time, that would be fascinating.
It would. And it's not just, so now these economic impact studies actually, they look at a wide variety of things. They'll look at how it affects affordable housing. They'll look at how it affects environmental conditions locally. They look at heritage tourism, which I think is something that we could certainly, particularly after this great year with the 250 events, we could really use to look at, study closely. There's a lot of wonderful, there's also some studies about how it affects startup businesses. Startup businesses are more likely to go into older spaces, generally because they rent for cheaper, but also because they're in established neighborhoods. And sometimes they're just cooler. And I think
cooler.
There's a landscape. I don't know what her formal degree is. Jane Jacobs is famous, though. She actually spent some time in Fredericksburg, but she was in New York City and she fought Robert Morris during the modernist era, right? And was saying, essentially, she was assessing, like a sociologist, she assessed the streets. But she was also an architectural critic, anyway, and she had said that that old ideas can sometimes go into new buildings and be successful. You can have a new old restaurant or something like this, but new ideas have to go into old buildings. The idea is that it's kind of almost a way that we accept things, which to me kind of likens to the fact that like sometimes fake materials, when they come out, they imitate the first material, right? Margarine, for example, the way that vinyl siding was embossed to imitate wood siding, right? Anyway, these things
it's
that
true.
Sometimes that we culturally accept things that they're just like very close to what we had from before. But anyway, so it also affects our health and well-being. I think the economic impact study would look into that. So that's a really important thing that sadly is not included in our current budget. I know there was talk about it coming in. Maybe it'll still be back there. I know staff had only requested $50,000, at this point, that $50,000 figure was from like 5 years ago. So I think we need to go up to $100,000. But when we put it in perspective, the Renwick Historic Structures Report was $100,000 for one complex, and this would be for the entire city. I think we've also got a couple of HVAC systems slated for replacement that cost more than this study, like $150,000 to replace certain things. Anyway, so when you think about it, for the bang for your buck, and I will say that the National Park Service has been doing this economic impact study every year
I thought so.
Right? You can go to their website, and they've actually got, and they tell you however many 22 million visitors that came in the last year, and they spent X number of dollars locally. And so, so they find it vital to continue to express, and I think that local business owners would be very pleased to see some of this data. Mm-hmm. Realtors, clearly. I think, again, the private investment world is certainly in on the game, and I think it's it'd be really nice if our leadership got in on it, too. That's one thing I'd like to see. And then secondly, you know, we had two other goals, of which only one cost money. That was the tax, the expansion of the rehabilitation tax credit that we have locally, even though it's an exemption program. But I don't know that the climate really is going to go there. It seems as though finance departments and things are already complaining about the number of, they're citing and referencing a loss of revenue that's coming in from these exemptions, even though the vast majority of them are related to new economic growth and development incentives, and also the elderly and the disabled vets. These are not bad things to give a little relief to, but neither is rehabilitating our aging existing building stock. So, you know, so I'll keep at it. Planning Commission had also asked for funds, actually the creation of a historic resources fund that would essentially be a pool of money to help the city support maintaining the existing resources it has, particularly like, you know, like the monuments and the, what was it, when they went to go paint the bollards there around Hugh Mercer on Washington Avenue, things like this landscape stuff. And that did not get approved. And I think it was the second year in a row, maybe third year they've asked for it. So anyway, so we're having a little tough times, you know, and I realize it's tough everywhere and across the board. But I think, you know, all the better reason to invest in what has a long-term payoff. And that really is, like I said, bringing some of our aging buildings, some of our vacant buildings, back up into service and really reclaiming that revenue for the long run. Anyway.
Dave Peckler here for Historic Fredericksburg Foundation. Before we get out of here, we do need to talk about some events coming
please.
Up.
That's
and
right.
You've got a busy April.
We do. It's very exciting.
And a lot of really interesting sounding things. You and Michael Spencer are doing something with Washington Heritage Museum.
That's on April 2nd. That's right. Good lectures coming up about the dawn of the revolution. Again, exploring our colonial heritage and what it's really given us. Yeah.
So
looking forward to it.
That's what, 10 o'clock?
Oh, yes. 10 o'clock, Thursday the 2nd. That's right. And I will say, I mentioned those mutual assurance policies earlier. I will say that there's a lot of those that we use and reference, and Michael likes to play with digital models. So he's recreated a lot of this early revolutionary era buildings and landscape.
Sounds
interesting to me. Yeah, because it's hard to imagine to think that Fredericksburg was so sparsely populated with only a handful of this or that or certain buildings we've lost. And so from that long ago, digital model reinterpretation, these things are kind of really helpful to get our imaginations going, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it should be lots of fun. Yeah, looking forward to that very much.
Whenever you hear historians talk about the Battle of Fredericksburg and you talk about what the landscape was like, it's all houses now.
It was an open field. Right. And even then at that time, and I will say it's fun for our lecture there, because of course Fielding Lewis is the one who really helped settle the north side of town. So he was a very big proponent of our city and certainly our biggest developer at that time. So we're kind of going back in time to explore that for sure.
Interesting. So what else you got going?
Okay, great. So let's see. In April, we actually have a whole lecture series that Barbara Anderson is doing in conjunction with the Masons. So that should be really fun. That's on our social media. On April 15th, HFI is partnering with UMW and with the College Terrace Neighborhood Association to talk about preserving community. Actually, it's going to be kind of something that we focus on engaging and speaking out on how you can help, kind of protect your or preserve your neighborhood, what you like best about your neighborhood, those sorts of things to engage. April 18th will be Earth Day, like I said earlier, with my window. You can come reglaze a window with me at Old Mill. And then on the 25th, I'm actually working with some local housing advocates. We're going to do something about preserving our NOAA. That's a great term. I love all the urban planning terms that get broke down. Our naturally occurring occurring affordable housing, which is essentially the older, smaller, better places that actually are existing homes that that I said many being vacant, some more run down and in need of investment than others. How do we keep that? We can talk about the new numbers all we want, and measuring new housing is easy. You get building permits and you know the number of lots and you know this stuff. Quantifying and tracking our existing housing is a bigger challenge, but it's more important because it actually is the most affordable housing out there. So anyway, market affordable, attainable, I don't know, there's all these terms, but nonetheless, like I said, those older, quirkier little spaces, many of which that are already bought and paid for, you know, so the rent and the management of the property expenses aren't quite as high.
Yeah.
So those things are really important, and I'm really looking forward to working with some folks from Habitat for Humanity, Virginia Coalition for Housing Coalition, FAR, and others, that I think it'll be really nice to come together with these folks and talk about what we can do.
What's so interesting as we talk about this, Danae, is that this topic and these talks, it's not just like these are just historians who get together and talk about this. You make it really current and now.
Yes, preservation is alive. It's definitely a part of, it's a part of who we are. It should be a part of who we are. It's conservation, right? I love to say that historic preservation in America, that's the term we gave it. But over in England and everywhere else across the world, it's called heritage conservation. And it's just the smart thing of conserving your resources, right? And also, yes, to recognize all of the different varied benefits, which that economic impact study actually really does. It talks about the investment in jobs and skilled jobs, right? Because when you rehabilitate, you're actually investing more in labor than you are in parts and pieces. So it's actually a higher quality investment. So anyway, all these little things that we don't recognize, the ways that that the spaces around us contribute to our sense of identity, right? Like when you lose a building, there have some psychologists have called it like akin to root shock, that you kind of almost become traumatized. And I bet you people can talk about a place that they really like
and
miss, right?
There are places. We have seen
those
places.
And you're like, God, why did we lose the Opera House? How did we lose this other thing? And you just really regret. It only goes one way, you know? So it's very much an alive thing. And this town, of course, has a deep roots in it and a strong commitment to it. And so I will say, I got to give a shout out to the city for doing their, they are currently, at least from this last budget cycle and looking forward, there's going to be, and they're working on a National Register Historic District for Mayfield, which is really wonderful because, again, it opens up those financial incentives for people to preserve. And there is money in the budget this time around to start stabilizing some of the buildings out at Idlewild, which, of course, has been... aging and neglected for a while. So that's really great. There's big things. You know, it's not, as Scott Walker likes to say, preservation is not cheap, it's not easy, but it sure is worth it, you know.
So, because when it's gone, it's gone.
It's gone, that's right. And I mean, again, you lose the stories and you lose the tangible ability. I mean, what would this town be like if you couldn't actually walk the streets and experience, right? Some of the tours that Barbara's leading this year are going to be wonderful, by the way, or this upcoming spring. But yeah, what would it be like if you couldn't go sit in the church and feel, you know that people were there praying during the Civil War, people were there praying during, you know, the Depression. It's a way that connects us. It tells us we're bigger than ourselves, and it really is culturally enriching. It makes us vibrant, if they like to say that word, whatever that means.
Or I just talked about this with Ann Garin the other day. What if, you know, what if the Mary Washington House had been packed up and shipped to Chicago for the World's Fair?
Right. It's true. I mean, and again, I think I often think about how the fact we used to have, so I've been doing some oral histories with 93-year-old Weber Taylor, and we were just discussing how big February was for George Washington, that there used to be a parade, that the boys used to throw like stones or washers across the Rappahannock, that there used to be like little folded, like you'd buy little hatchets everywhere, because like the whole month of February is dedicated to George. And I was like, when's the last time we had a parade for George Washington? You know? Like,
I don't ever remember one.
I don't know. I remember we had a parade for Huntley not that long ago. I really wish that we would have a parade. I mean,
right.
Huntley, you're awesome. It's great. I'm really glad you're here too. But I just think, like, you know, like bringing back like our hometown boy, like, good Lord. In the Candlelight Tour brochure, towards the end of the booklet, I actually did a transcribed. George wrote a letter to town. The people of town wrote a letter to George after the end of the war, and George responded. And, you know, the people are like, George, gosh, we're so proud of you. And George writes back, and he's like, well, you know, Fredericksburg gave me everything. And he's like, you know, my mother, you know, had to work hard to do all of this. And anyway, and I'm so indebted to the people who are there. And then you realize how this community came together, you know, supported him. And like I said, generations since, very, very aware and very conscious of our roots and our commitment to the American story. It's definitely worth investing in, you know?
Yeah.
So no, that should be really fun. Like I said, and I want to encourage everybody to go to HFI social media. Our office administrator, Bella's done a good job of putting together some pieces of there about events. There's just so much going on that I couldn't possibly like pull it all out right now. But just stay tuned by all means. And like I said, there's never been a better time to really jump in and engage.
You will find a lot of stuff. When we come back, we'll wrap it up this morning and talk about just the importance of joining HFFI and in contributing to their work. Today, Peckler here. We'll wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Always good stuff with Danae Peckler here this morning from the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, hffi.org, the website. And like Danae mentioned, the social media, the Facebook page is great for information. Mm-hmm. It's important. Yeah. Whether you're just a regular person and whether you live in Fredericksburg or not, to be involved with the preservation that HFFI does.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I constantly marvel at the number of people who have, like I said, who have contributed a little portion of their lifeblood or cut off a piece of their arm in order to serve HFI. But it is a community investment, and it requires reinvestment regularly and support. And I am I'm always so touched by the number of people. We had such a great turnout at the annual meeting, and we've had some really wonderful and generous donations in the last couple of years. And that's so fabulous. Of course, we also take people's time. We'd love to have your time or your skill sets in other ways too. We have a lot of events going on that we can use assistance with. We have a lot of little research projects that it would be fun, like I said, to get started. And certainly we're willing to, I like inspiring someone on whatever it is they're interested in and diving a little bit further.
It helps you.
Yeah.
And you're teaching someone a skill of how to do that.
Exactly. And I think too that when you know the stories, not only may of the building you own or the neighborhood you're in, but again, it just makes a more meaningful connection. And as you walk down the street, we have so many people who like to walk and bike. I think when you're moving at pedestrian and bike speeds, you know, you get to take in a lot more than what you normally would. And again, you kind of get a greater appreciation for the hands and the people that made those places last. And maybe then, you chip in, right? You do your part and you chip in. But no, being a member of HFI is a great way, of course, to support our mission. And we certainly do try to hit all the aspects. I've had people say, like, why not you, what if you were to focus just like on one? Maybe you could get something better if you limited and just went after. And I was like, I can't do that. I can't drop the ball. I got to move all the balls forward at once. We got to keep talking about the rehabilitation tax credit and how that's community-wide. We got to talk about the economic impact. It's community-wide. That's what sets HFI apart from some of our other historic organizations. I mean, we all work as a team. We're all important because nurturing this community and our heritage tourism assets really is what, again, makes us unique, distinct, and a really great place to live. But HFI is the only community-wide preservation advocate. Like I said, it's not just within the historic district. It's without of it. It's certainly, we also say Fredericksburg area. I think we brought over some Stafford folks to partner with for a candlelight tour. And certainly our park service goes beyond Fredericksburg's boundaries. But these are all unique assets that, again, you're right, are priceless and irreplaceable. So working to kind of elevate and raise awareness of the needs, I will say with the park service for candlelight tour, we did a great little spread there talking about how their budget has been taking a hit, clearly, we all know. And also, they have really doubled down, though, in supporting their volunteers. And like I said, they've never been more needed. So we're all in it together. And I think that it's definitely worth it. Like I said, not easy, not cheap, but so worth it. So I would really love it if everybody came out and joined and participated a little bit more. I just like meeting people and seeing their faces, too.
Well,
so, you know.
It's the history of Fredericksburg that's so important and to hold on to. And we have all seen situations where things in the dark of night have all of a sudden disappeared on us.
Truth, right?
Or
when the story is wrong. You know, I think about this too. Like, what was it? When sometimes it's just a casual history. Because like I said, who has the time to really invest in a deep dive? And then all of a sudden we get into a deep dive, like the public health building that was torn down over there by the hospital, used the same types of funds in order to build that, and actually was a local architect, and the city actually had to throw in more money than what we did for the hospital, what is now the old hospital, but not the old hospital. Right. Anyway, regardless, but you know, those stories just get kind of lost. And I'm currently actually, as I look back over the budget documents, I'm getting back into Alum Spring Park. I had started to write essentially a preliminary information form to kind of talk about the historic significance of that space. But you know, the city's looking to kind of readjust the whole park, and kind of it's not It's not what I'd like. The park was created as a natural history park and reflects 1968 park design and also a little bit of local history and culture. And so so looking a little closely at some of those stories and the places that, like I said, we really unite and enjoy, that's what makes it worth it. So
we'll do a show sometime and talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to know more about that.
It's definitely back up on my radar. Amongst other things. But yeah, it's a great, unique little special place. And I don't want to see it change too much. That would be a little sad and upsetting.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more. HFFI.org, again, to get involved. HFFI.org. And again, Danae and Michael Spencer on April the 2nd
at the
Central Rappahannock Regional Library, 10 o'clock in the morning, a free program. And take that in. Danae, thank you. We'll talk again soon.
This is always looking forward to it.
Informational. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Danae Peckler, Historic Fredericksburg Foundation. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.